All right, guys, if you're drafting for week two this weekend, do not miss out on live draft assistant on Pitcher List. It is with the pro subscription, but it's got everything you guys need to absolutely crush your drafts. Steve and I were using it for TGFBI. You can load the picks in, see how you rank against your other league members in the middle of the draft. I need a little more steals. I need some whip help, all that great stuff. It's a phenomenal tool, fully integrated with PLV 2.0 projections. It's got more streamlined way of entering all the players. You can tag players like sleepers, targets, avoids. It's a fantastic tool. Steve, tell the viewers what you've liked about it.
Yeah, I've used this draft assistant exclusively this draft season. I've been a skeptic of these in the past. I've used them on and off to little, you know, little avail. I will be using this in all of my drafts going forward. It was an indispensable tool for me this draft season. I know there's still definitely some drafts that are going on, Thursday, Friday, this weekend. So use it. Sign up for PL Pro. It's a great tool, customizable, easy to use, intuitive. Everything that all the other draft tools that I've used, and I've used a lot of them, are not. So, not just coming from a pitcherless man, but just from a fantasy baseball guy, this tool is great, and I would definitely sign up for it and use it for your drafts going forward.
Yeah, one of many phenomenal tools from a PL Pro subscription. So get in there, guys. Start of the season, you want to be looking at all the Kyle Bland, you know, Streamlit apps, all that fun stuff. So yeah, get in there. It is a promo code podcast LDA15 for 15% off. Get ready to crush your drafts.
You're listening to Wins Above Fantasy, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network with Van Burnett and Steve Gisuelli.
Welcome back, everybody. It is Wins Above Fantasy, episode 207, as this releases Thursday, March 26th, which means it is the league-wide opening day, and could not be more excited to be talking baseball with you guys. We've got our hallmark show that we've done for, gosh, what is it, 6 years running now, Steve, the chalkboard predictions, where we plant a flag in the ground. We each give three targets, three fades for the season that have to outperform or underperform their ADP by 20%. We keep track of it. We talk about it at the end of the year. It's always a fantastic show. And at the end, while most people don't care at all about our home leagues, nothing matters more to Steve and myself, so we have to spend 10-15 minutes talking about who we went with. It's been a long off season, and now we've got full rosters. What a great feeling. What a great feeling to have baseball back. Steve, how's it going over there, man? Doesn't get better than this type of show.
Does not get better than this. It's just been a great week. You know, we're recording this on Tuesday, so we don't have real baseball just yet. But we're almost there. It's a tradition for my buddies and I to take off last Thursday, the first Thursday of March Madness. We watch all the games together. We did that. Had my home league draft on Saturday. That was an all-day event, a great time. It's, you know, everyone that listens to this show, there's nothing like drafting in a league that you've been in with a bunch of buddies for however long, whether that be just one season or 15, whatever it is. It's truly the greatest day of the year, and it's a great time to have baseball back. I cannot be more excited, and the fact that we're doing this for the sixth year in a row is also makes this super special too. It's a super fun show, like you said, the backbone of our show. So excited to get into it, excited to talk names and plant some flags on some guys.
Yeah. Now I noticed you added to the rules, Steve, because you've gone down this path before with the no catcher, no relievers as a rule. Otherwise, we keep score on the fan graphs, player rater, and this is based on March ADP. Although, Steve, I'll just leave this here as a tease. I might have to dispute one of your picks because there's a mustache twirling, sneaky move going on with one of them. But I want to talk about the player so bad that I'm gonna let that ride.
I think we added that last year, and the relievers make sense, right? Especially since we're using 8 NFBC ADP, it's pretty easy to you can just choose basically any three relievers and have a leg up there. And catchers too, right? Catchers are pretty inflated in two catcher leagues in NFBC ADP. My pushback when we get to the player will be because, you know, this guy's being drafted there in one catcher leagues. I kind of found a loophole there and gave myself the clearance to give that pick and not to spoil too much of who that might be already. If you have listened to the show, you probably know who it is. That being said, excited to get into it.
All right, let's do it. So I will go ahead and lead us off with my first target. We'll keep it in the positives. And Steve, the lamp of learning that I've had for several years in a row is to not move too far away from where your gut is in October. It's the worst feeling in the world when you go into the offseason loving a guy and then you read 25 reports and slowly you're like, yeah, maybe I'm not as in on him. George Springer at ADP 91 was kind of a WAF champion all last year. We were talking about him and we bought into the bounce back from the very beginning of the earliest signs of it, where the narrative kind of matched up. He talked about how he completely changed his approach at the plate to only take his A swings and basically swing freely regardless of the pitch, stop trying to be a slap hitter at certain moments. And we saw George Springer completely go off. And then fast forward all the way to the end of what was, you know, more or less a career year. I know that's high praise for a guy like George Springer that's had so much success, but at age 35, we saw 32 homers, 18 steals, a 309 average, a 959 OPS, and every underlying Statcast metric was through the roof. I think if he was 26 and not 36, we'd be talking about George Springer like he's a second rounder. The problem is he's 36. However, he's now grabbed 15 stolen bases or more for three seasons in a row. Is it longer than that? Just about four seasons in a row. Nothing really looks like it's slowing down for Springer. He's got protection from being at DH. He's leading off and icing on the cake. He has three homers with a 1066 OPS in the spring, batting 324. I love the plate discipline. I love the kind of lineup context and the fact that he's, you know, the Blue Jays are great vibes right now. And yeah, if you go way back to our too early pitcher list mock, I had to look at it, Steve, because I remember when we made the pick, it felt a little early and there was a little pop in the chat where people were like, oh, I was waiting to see how early we would go, but I love that pick and I've got him this high. That was in the fifth round. He is now going at pick 91. So kind of late seventh round, depending on the league size. So for this to hit, he would need to finish 73rd or better. But I love it here. I'm also in golf season myself. So I said, for any golf fans out there, this is like a Justin Rose type of final act for George Springer, where he's aging like wine. And I'm on board, man. I like the old man squad, and I'm not straying from my October vibes of Springer. He's my first pick. Quick thoughts on target one for me.
I'm kind of not surprised at the fall. Like we've said on the show, like I've said, the fantasy baseball community is ageist. And I get it. It's a projection-based industry. We look to regress things to the mean. We put aging curves onto people and, you know, appropriately make best guess assumptions based on historical data of what players did at certain ages. And it's easy to regress George Springer to a 36-year-old that prior to last year for the last three seasons had, you know, declined from a 133 WRC plus to 103 to 94. Saw his home runs totals in that time drop from 25 to 21 to 19. Saw a decrease in his barrel rate. All the telltale signs of aging and a player falling out of favor due to his age were true for George Springer. That all changed last year. The underlying metrics say that changed last year. There was nothing in that data that said this was a lucky year. It was a career best barrel rate. It was a hard hit rate that, you know, he never came close to in prior years. A max EV that was, you know, in line with his career peak in 2019, the last time he put together a season like this. It was all real. That said, I get why you would bank on some regression here. And there's probably will be some regression off of what was a career year for a 35-year-old or the second best season of his career as a 35-year-old. That said, something that the projections may miss is that first piece that you hinted on, the intent. No projection system is going to be able to tell, hey, I'm taking my A swing and having this mentality. Sure, yeah, now some projections have that and have bat speed in them, right? George Springer mm-hmm. did set, you know, in the time that we had bat speed tracking data, did have his highest bat speed since we have it in the last 3 years. That being said, I don't know if there is something that can model out, or at least there isn't something that can model out, hey, George Springer completely changed his approach and became this new player in 2026, and that's combined with the underlying metrics that indicate, you know, these results are real, have you know, more meaning. I think maybe could be weighted as much as someone saying, you know, it's going to be hard for a 36-year-old to repeat what he just did, which I think is true, but I also think that there is more reason to buy the projection, to buy a, you know, a less regressed projection rather than what, you know, the traditional projections would do to age a 36-year-old outfielder who had, you know, two pretty poor seasons prior to last year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's a good, a couple other points I'll bring up is, if you're looking for any more reason to know that last year was a heater, he added four homers on in the postseason, with a .284 average, .900 OPS. So, you know, if you roll that in, which I know is an if, now we're talking about a 36 homer guy. And I think that's the point, is if you're expecting what he just did, it is a first rounder, maybe a second rounder. So then it's like, okay, was it a complete fluke? Is he going to regress? And to me, I think the narrative, what we saw, and then that's the type of spring training stats that I actually am paying attention to. Like if George Springer was, you know, 1-for-25 or something and had a bunch of strikeouts, then I'm starting to say, oh yeah, maybe that was a little wishy-washy.
To me, for his spring training, it's the 11% strikeout rate and 18% walk rate. Like,
yeah,
that shows me that's
he's had good plate discipline for years, and that didn't go away with the free swinging thing.
That's always been there, yeah.
So that's Springer. I think he's a great grab. Unfortunately, my brother got him in the home league draft. By the way, shout out to the home league, 25 years. What a ride. We'll talk about it later. Steve, on to you for target number one. Let's hear who we got here.
My first target is Jackson Merrill. He, in March... I think you said it's off the top, but we're using March NFBC ADP, so March 1st to the 23rd, I think it was. Mm-hmm. His March ADP at NFBC is 66, so he'll need to finish as the 53rd player or better. Last year was a disaster for Jackson Merrill. People bought into it. He was a second, third-round pick, and it just was not good. He injured his hamstring in April. He got slapped in the head with a glove trying to steal or slide in June, had a concussion, and in August had an ankle sprain. Two of those three injuries limit base stealing, so that tells me why the base stealing number was so suppressed. That being said, there was still a lot under the hood that was basically in line with what made him so special in 2024. What made him so special in 2024 was 24 homers, 16 steals, elite plate discipline with just a 17% strikeout rate, a 130 WRC plus, you know, every sort of hit tool that you could dream of. Oh, and he was 21 and he was playing center field after coming up as a shortstop and never playing center field professionally prior to that, like spring, I think. So, what he did was super, super impressive, and I think a lot of it has been erased by what was just a super injury-riddled 2025, and I don't see anything that's telling me the player, other than the injuries, regressed. There is still a lot to like. He improved his barrel rate. His hard hit rate remained the same. His launch angle sweet spot was, you know, best in the league. So this is a guy that can get the most out of his barrels. And, you know, he barreled the ball up at a better rate last season. Hits the ball at the right angle and barrels the ball up at a better rate than he did in 2025. He was 82nd percentile despite all those injuries. His XBA was still 263. His X-Slug 490. He only slugged 457 last year. Like, he still put up a good season despite all that. It was just an elevated cost and a limited number of games that suppressed his fantasy value. The tools are still all there to be, like, you know, a top 15 outfielder, top 10 outfielder, and the player that, you know, you could project growth on after that amazing, amazing rookie season when he was just 21 years old.
Yeah, I mean, I showed you, Steve, the screenshot. I was trying to acquire Jackson Merrill in the home league via trade already. So in a vacuum, I like the player. That said, I do have questions, especially for 5x5 context, just about, and I think it's a great point that you brought up on the injury. An April hamstring is a pretty good excuse, right? As is an ankle sprain in August for him not stealing bases. That said, I would have loved to see a couple bags this spring. He's got zero in spring. So if you project him out, what the projection systems have him at is, like, you know, they've, the high on there is 9 steals. Even if we give Merrill, let's say, 12 to 15, which I know is down from what he did a couple years back when he had 16. I think my question with him, and he's just that type of, we used to say way back in the day, like the Ben Zobrist mold, where it's like they don't have one standout category, but they kind of chip in on a lot of things. And it's like the sum of the parts is greater than the whole, that whole deal. Because he doesn't really have one category that is berserk, you know what I mean, to be a top 10 outfielder. I guess I would ask, what do you think this hitting from a stat standpoint looks like? Do you think everything just comes up a little bit where it's like, 27 homers, 295, 15 steals?
I think he's a player. I mean, you know, 90th percentile outcome. It's like, you know, a guy that hits close to 290, 300 with 25 homers, you know, 100 RBIs and runs and 15 steals, right? Like, that's, and if that happened, that's, arguably a top 5 player in the sport. I'm not saying that that's going to happen, but I think he could be a good contributor in all categories. A Zobrist is a peak Zobrist is like a good comp with maybe a little bit more power. Just because he did show that surprising pop, hitting the 24 homers as a 21-year-old in 156 games in 2024.
Yep. Just because this was not on my bingo card, I've got Ben Zobrist, 2009, 27 homers, 17 steals, 297 batting average. I think, and that's like the, like you said, like the 95th percentile outcome. But I think I like Merrill, and I'm with you that at age 22, it's way too soon to just kind of not factor in development and growth. But if the steals dry up, it puts some pressure on the batting average and the homers is all I'll say. But I like these
guys that are like, okay, we're drafting him as a second, third rounder. We fully believe, there's some sort of regression or reason or fallback, if you will, the next year. And it's like, okay, never mind. Yep. But you believe that the year before, like, you should still believe it, especially if there's all of these injuries that happen and sort of a reason why he failed to meet those expectations.
Yes. That wisdom might rearrange my order, because that is a perfect segue to... Oh, are we doing target fade?
Yeah, Steve? That's what we've done in the past, okay, right? Right. I'm good with that.
Yeah, just so we don't get too, we always talk about the hater aid. We can't just have six negative picks in a row. Okay, so I'll do my first fade. And I'm curious your thoughts on fading Bryce Terang. Now, this is the gamesmanship of this is Terang's ADP is 48. So he would only have to fall to be 58 or worse. So it's kind of a low bar for this to hit because, you know, if he finishes 65th, that's not too bad. I don't think Bryce Terang is a complete bust. I do think Bryce Terang took some notable steps forward last year with the barrel rate increasing from 2.5% up to 8%, which is still below league average, but it's respectable. And some other numbers climbed up too, like the hard hit, things of that nature. That said, last year we saw only 24 steals from him versus the 50 the year before. And that was also when Craig Counsell moved to the Cubs. So that's kind of in the back of my head. And then just in general last year, and I get that Terang's a spark plug. He as well at 26 could continue to take steps forward. And he had 18 homers last year versus 7 the year prior. So he definitely took a step forward from a power standpoint. But I think part of the ADP here is some second base tax. I also think we're a little quick to just think we're going to pair his 288 average last year with the bonkers speed from the year before because he didn't demonstrate that he was running that much. And the BABIP last year was, I don't have it right in front of me, I think it was 356.
Yeah, there you go. That's
356. And the years before it was 300 and 268. Like, he is a speedster. He's probably going to run a high BABIP, but the projections have his BABIP around 310, and they have his batting average 30 points lower than last year, around 258. They do have the steals coming up a little bit, but I just wonder if this is 14 homers, 28 steals, 255. I'm not blown away by the Brewers' offense. I know that they kind of had, you know, the magic dust last year and everything seemed to be going right, but he's hitting behind Jackson Churio, which is nice. The 3-4 is William Contreras and Christian Yelich. Good players, but after that, it's kind of ho-hum, and even Contreras and Yelich have to be like a bottom 10, third, fourth hitter in the majors. So I don't think the counting stats will be crazy. In general, again, this is just a guy that I've continuously found myself skipping over and having a hard time drafting at that spot in the draft. So I said, okay, if I'm going to pick a fade, which in my opinion is always a little bit harder because we don't spend all offseason talking about who we don't like, Terang is one that I'm ready to make the argument for. And I think he'll probably land around like the mid-70s. So again, not a bust, but just factoring in a little bit of position taxed and some clear regression on the batting average. Thoughts on Terang, Steve? Do you have any shares?
I don't, but he was a target of mine. And I'll give you a little pushback. Like, I think that there was, you know, and it's more anecdotal, but you hear that Bryce Terang, a guy that you never would assume power of, hear these, that has this power that he had, say, oh, that's a guy to watch out for in batting practice, right? Like, before he sort of broke out and hit the 18 homers last year, you never would have thought that. And it seems like it's translating into game power, and that clicked in the second half of the season. Like, if you look at his rolling charts of just barrel rate, hard hit, it's just a steep, steady climb up the mountain from the first half to the second half last season. So I really do think that I kind of buy the high BABIP because he's now hits the ball extremely hard. He went from a 29% hard hit rate to a 47% hard hit rate. That's absolutely insane of a, insane type of jump that you never really see. You know, the barrel rate is at 8%. I don't think he's a 25, 30 homer hitter, but I think he's comfortably 18 to low 20s. And then with that, like, I don't see a reason why he couldn't steal 50 again, other than the fact that, you know, maybe he's hitting more homers, and who knows, maybe there was this change in philosophy with the Brewers. They are a team that does like to steal bases. I just think that there's a chance that he could sort of pair, maybe not the 50, but 30, 35 stolen bases. You could see kind of like a, like, it reminds me of like a early career Trey Turner, like, you know, when he had sneaky 20, 25 homer pop, and maybe didn't steal as many bases you expect. This was pre stolen base changes rules. And, you know, he always hovered around 30, and it's like, why is this guy that's always on base and has the best sprint speed in the league only stealing 30 bases? Like, you know, sometimes that's just how they play. Like, they don't want to risk it. They don't want to risk injury, whatever it is. You know, maybe they hit a lot more doubles and more homers than you would expect from a prototypical speedster. But that that being said, my point being, like, yeah, I think that if his fade was to hit, I think that that's his sort of floor, which is kind of why I liked him. And I think there is potentially room for more here.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good point. And I think the midseason, whatever the tweak was, I think it was just something in the batting stance was at the start of the year. So he was tinkering.
Yeah.
But then in August, 10 of his 18 homers came. So he went nuclear in August. But then in September, it came back to just two. So if you want to, and I'll be fair to say he also has three homers in spring. So if we're going to say that is a positive for Springer, we got to say it for Terang as well. So yeah, I don't think it's like a red hot, this is a bust type of pick, but to me, I've been kind of fading and I see a world where this doesn't take a step forward and the homers look like a high watermark. The average looks like a high watermark, but I'm not cheering against him. I mean, he's a 26-year-old, and like you said, there's a lot of exciting stuff. The hard hit data did go up 76th percentile, so it's good, not great. And then the barrel rate still has a way to go, but I bet that was sky high in August with 10 homers. So, yeah, we'll see on Terang. Let's jump over to your first fade, Steve.
My first fade here. So this is the hint of me sort of skirting around the rules, but that's Cal Raleigh. It's sort of been a fade of mine all off season. You can tell it is a catcher. He does have a high ADP. So for him for this to hit, it would be 20th or worse. I don't know. What do you want to say? 25th or worse as a penalty for me since he's going at ADP 17.
Yeah, you got to take the tax.
I think that's
there.
Fair. A little tax. But I like Cal Raleigh as a player. I liked him prior to last year. He was a great source of power at a position that's tough to find. That being said, it's just super, super hard for a catcher to repeat what he just did after a 60 homer season. I went back and looked since 1970, the top five homers by a catcher and what they did the following season. So in 2021, Sal Perez had 48 home runs. The next season, he had 23 in 114 games. So, okay, you want to take that out. He was injured. He had 23 in 140 games in 2024. Last year, he played mostly a full season, was 30 homers. That's good. That's not draft a catcher in the second round good. Johnny Bench in 1970, hit 45 home runs. The next season, in 1971, hit 27. In 1972, he hit 40 home runs, hit 25 the season after. So he did hit 40 again. It just wasn't in consecutive seasons. In 1996, Todd Hundley hit 40 home runs for the Mets. The next season, he hit 30. So still pretty good, but also not historic. The only one to consistently hit like 35 homers, 40 homers year in, year out as a catcher is Mike Piazza. It's just so hard to do at a position that's so demanding and, you know, to get the you need to get the volume that you got. There's so many chances to get hurt or just nicked up, right? Like you could hurt a finger and that could hurt your power. Like that's why it's so hard to do this as a catcher year in and year out. So it's more just betting against the catcher having two historic seasons in a row. And, you know, coupled with the fact like Piazza was just like one of the best hitters ever, like regardless of position, like, you know, Hall of Fame guy who had close to 500 home runs, like didn't strike out you know, the best hitting catcher ever, you know, him or Johnny Bench. Like Cal Raleigh has extreme flaws as a player with a strikeout rate and, you know, historically low batting average. And like, it's not like he hit for a ton of average last year either. He hit what, 250? You know, I just think that Raleigh could have a good season and it's not going to be close to the investment that people pay. Like all these projections has him for 35, 39, 42 homers. Like I think that it's very realistic that he has a 2022 or 2023 season where it's nice and hits, you know, low 30s homer totals, but strikes out 27-28% of the time and hits 220-230. Like, that's what I think is, you know, in the cards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's similar to the Terang one in Spirit, that it's like it's not a bust pick in a way. It's more just like trying
he still to, could be catch, he still could be catcher one, and this could still be right. Like,
yeah, but I do agree that it's easier to imagine Terang improving on last season than it is to picture Cal Raleigh improving on last season.
Yeah.
But it is worth noting that most of the names you mentioned never hit 60, or if we're counting postseason, 65 homers. So, you know, I am cheering against this pick of yours, Steve, more than any other ones this year, because I think baseball is great when everyone is like, oh, my God, he's doing it.
Yeah, it was a fun season. Yeah.
Yeah, no doubt. But, yeah, not too much pushback for me, although I do think that I am taking the over on 40 homers for Cal Raleigh.
Maybe that could be a mayor's bet here. Are we having a WAF mayor's bet?
I think we do need that one. Raleigh? Yeah. Let's see. We'll do the Raleigh at 40, and we'll see if any others pop up. Yeah. Okay, so we're through a target and a fade each, but we're going to take our first ad break before we get to the rest. We'll be right back after this. Okay, so Steve, we are back over to positive talk, and we've got my second target. And my second target, which I was going to take the segue that you said, where you were saying if you really like a guy like Jackson Merrill, you shouldn't let one weird season completely throw your opinion. And it's after 6 years of Wins Above Fantasy, we don't have a lot of firsts, but this is a first because I have a back-to-back chalkboard target.
Wow.
Last year, I led off with Isak Paredes. He was ADP like 168, and he had to get to 145. This year, I am right back in on Isak. The difference is I've got a 60-pick discount where he's now at ADP 230, and he needs to get to 184 or better. Little confirmation bias here. He was my parachute pick in the home league. But I've been in on Isak Paredes. And last year, you know, this is going to sound on repeat, but probably my favorite hitter ballpark match, you know, even going back to the CJ Crone Coors, Eugenio going to Great American Small Park, all of these that feel like they're matches made in heaven. Paredes is a perfect example because Tampa have kind of the mini Crawford boxes. That's where he hit 32. Then he goes to Wrigley, really struggled, even though he had like 20 homers in 100 games. And then last year we were all in on this, and he missed 55 games from a hamstring, one bad hamstring issue that was a 10-day, then a 60-day. He still had 20 homers in just around 100 games and 810 OPS. And Paredes, he's just, to me, he is tailor-made for points leagues, but also just if you get him for 130 games, I think this guy is cruising past 25 homers, a good hit tool as well. He's slated second in that lineup, but that's the one big caveat working against me for this one is it's a little more crowded in Houston now with Correa at third. I think Jeremy Pena should be back for opening day. They've talked about trying to get reps there. I mean, if you look at their full roster, Paredes is probably like the fourth best hitter on that team. So they're trying to get his bat in there. They've kind of skirted the question. There were some trade rumors, but I expect that he will probably play, I'm hoping, 4 out of 5 days, and they just rotate things around between, I know during the offseason, he had worked a little at first base, second base, third base. He can DH as well if they let Yordan Alvarez play outfield like he likes to do. So that's where I'm at on Paredes. But I think that, at this discount price, I'm kind of betting that life finds a way for a guy who's still just 27 years old and feels like he should rack up some counting stats, hit 25 homers easily. I mean, my actual bet is that this is 30 plus, and it might need to be for it to get there because he's not going to hit 270 or 280. But Paredes is a guy that can go off. We've seen it in stretches. He's just been unlucky and injured. But I think he's going to string together something that looked like his May-June last year, where He had 13 homers in 2 months and had an 860 OPS. I just need that to be prolonged. So that's my spiel on Paredes, first ever back-to-back chalkboard pick. Hoping second time's the charm here.
Yeah, I like your logic. It's sound like he was still good in the limited time that he played. Everyone was salivating over the fact that this guy was going there and hitting to the Crawford boxes in Isaac Paredes. I'm just a little bit concerned about the depth chart. Like, they have one too many infielders. Unless they're going to move Altuve back to the outfield, which they said they're not going to do. You know, it just seems like between Christian Walker, Isaac Paredes, and Carlos Correa, like, there's going to be an odd man out, like, once Jeremy Payton is back. And it looks like I think he played the final game, their final exhibition game before opening day on Thursday. So, you know, maybe there's a trade there. I know there were some rumors. I know Christian Walker was also rumored to be traded. You know, and if it is Paredes that's traded, like, trade him back to the Rays or trade him to the Red Sox, right, like, somewhere where there's, like, a short left field that he could just pepper the ball off the monster or you know, have short home runs. Just not the Wrigley experiment again. That was just absolute disaster. This guy works in certain ballparks and certain ballparks only. But, yeah, it's a sound logic. I am just slightly concerned about the ballpark or the playing time, but... You know, the Astros lineup isn't what it once was. So like they kind of need,
exactly,
you know, to get some of this value off of with you know, Correa being, you know, post peak Correa, Tucker being gone, Bregman being gone. Like they need other guys to step up, and if Paredes is one, then he can certainly win that playing time because of his bat, and they're going to need that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's my hope, is just with it's a little bit of the tea leaves, but with him taking grounders at second and everything, they're just thinking,
yeah, they'll like find ways to play. Yeah, this fine way, you know, first base. And like the other thing, like these guys are all righties, right? Like there's no like natural platoon spot for him between any of those guys.
Right.
But, you know, like, yeah, like maybe Altuve does play in the outfield once a week. Paredes gets, you know, a DH spot. Paredes gets a go at second. Like Correa, like also maybe I'm concerned over nothing because, you know, Correa is not the you know, quintessential model of health, right? He's barely, I guess that's a little unfair. He has played basically 130 games, 140 games, four of the last five seasons, but still, you know, there definitely needs to be some load management with him, who's been hurt all the time and is now, you know, entering his age 31 season. So maybe there is a bit of a path to playing time, more of a path to playing time than I initially thought.
Yeah, it's kind of just banking on the fact that as a club they need the offense and that they work it out, but it does feel a little dicey to have a chalkboard pick that is not like locked into an everyday position. So I agree with you there. Okay, Steve, hit me with your second target here.
Yeah. My second target is Zach Wheeler going at ADP 117. So he needs to finish 94th or better. To be honest, and this comes back and bite me in the butt. But this feels like cheating. Like, Wheeler has just been so depressed draft-wise just because there's been so many questions around his health. He's had the thoracic outlet syndrome surgery, you know, the quote-unquote good thoracic outlet one, the venous one, not the one that, like, Matt Harvey had that ended his career, but more on the lines of Merrill Kelly, yeah, and him, and a few others that have had, you know, good success stories that have come back and pitched, whereas the other one, it's, you know, really, really hard to come back from. You know, there's no data yet, but like he's on a rehab assignment this weekend. Like it looks good. Like I think that there was just so much uncertainty around Wheeler, and you know, he was really good before the injury. He was arguably the last few years, you know, despite it being Paul Skeens's and Tariq Skubal's of the world, like he was arguably the best starting pitcher. That's how good he's been for Philly for the last, you know, 6 years. So I just think that there's, you know, a misprice here just due to the market, due to the injury. And I think Wheeler is set to return to Aistham once he's back on the mound. And it's just such good news that he's seemingly going to be back mid-April, like at the latest, it seems, considering he's on a rehab assignment already for this weekend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. I've got a little bit of FOMO myself that I don't have any shares. His ADP has and had been climbing throughout March. Like at the start of March, it was kind of, where are we at here?
Oh, yeah. Like, dude, in like January, February, like you could get Wheeler in like the 200s, I think.
Yeah, it was pretty low. And in the start of March, it looks like it was like a 150 ADP. Yeah. ADP. And now it's like, as of this week, the ADP is at like 115 with a min pick of 62. So, I mean, and now we're getting reports and everything. So yeah. I hear what you're saying. The other thing is, you know, what Brandon Woodruff did last year kind of, and I guess you could make the flip argument that like Strider didn't when he lost velo or like when he took it easier, but Wheeler has five pitches, you know what I mean? And yeah, for a wily veteran like that, I just have a feeling that when he gets on the mound. Now, I'm not sure, you mentioned, Steve, return to Aistham. Is that what you expect? Because I actually don't. I think we're going to see him be really good, but I don't think we're going to get the Wheeler of, you know what I mean, like sub three ERA and over a strikeout per inning. Do you expect that?
I don't, like, no, but at the same time, like, he had a 33% strikeout rate and a 5.6% walk rate before getting hurt last year in 150 innings. Like,
mm-hmm. Yeah, he doesn't need to do that.
I'm kind of just making a big assumption that this injury is not going to have any ill effects, which is a pretty big assumption.
Yeah. At 35.
But I guess kind of until I see otherwise, I have no reason to believe that Zach Wheeler won't be just as good or nearly as good as he was in the last few years. And he's kind of, you know, he's lost a tick of velocity a bit. You know, he was at 97.3 in 2021. In 2024, he was at 95.5. And yeah, there was a year where he had a 3.61 ERA, but it was still with a 27% strikeout rate and a 108 whip. He's had a sub one whip the last two seasons. So like he's made it work. And that one sub whip, one of those sub whips seasons came when he was at 95.5. So like if he comes back and is at 95, like with those pitches, with his pitchability, with how good he's been, I think he could still make it work. It's like a light Justin Verlander career. Sort of with Wheeler. So there is a bit of a leap of faith here. Like, you know, we don't have this, oh my gosh, look how good this data was. Like, I don't think he's made an official spring rehab start.
Right. It's just like a trust me, bro. And
yeah, exactly. So maybe I'm ignorant to that fact. But the fact that I'm taking the team sort of at their word and the fact that he is going on a rehab already, that he's ready to go and is Zach Wheeler.
Yeah. Yeah. It would be a lot harder to argue it if it was like from 70 to 50, right? Like that's not what you need for this to hit. Yeah. So yeah, I think it's a really good one. And again, a little FOMO, no doubt. Do you have any shares before we move on?
I have a share. Yes, I do have a share. Yeah.
Nice. Okay. So moving to my second fade, it is Sedan Rafaela at ADP 119. Again, similar model as Terang, just looking for guys that I have not remotely targeted and kind of moved away from. And Rafaela, while he is 25 years old and demonstrated some pull pop, I guess people probably look at this and say this is like a cheap spot in the draft for power speed. Because he had the 16 homers, 20 steals last year, but nothing really jumps out. And not only are, you know, the XBA is 240 and the barrel rate was kind of ho-hum, the hard hit rate was even worse. When I look at those guys and see pull pop, I go to check, like, do they have impressive pull air? he doesn't. So he's not that same mold where he's really taking advantage of that. Now, maybe he could still continue to work to like take a step forward in that. And that's just the profile of, you know, who he is at, as he grows into his late 20s. But in general, this is not the profile that I'm usually targeting. He's hitting eighth in the lineup. I feel like the discount isn't really there for the fact that he's hitting eighth and the fact that he's got such like an underwhelming Statcast batted ball data. So looking at Rafael at ADP 119, he would have to finish 142 or worse. And yeah, this just gives me that like flash in the pan vibes that we've seen from a handful of guys over the years, that if you don't have like elite plate discipline on one side or the other, if you don't have great batted ball data, if you don't have great pull air data, I'm just not going to do like mental gymnastics to figure out why I think you're a true, you know, top 100 pick, so to speak. So again, not extremely out on the player. It's one that I just haven't touched throughout the draft season. And the more I look into it, the more I'm just like, okay, I won't be shocked if Rafael is just kind of just a guy as we move forward compared to a lot of other more exciting guys on that roster, obviously. Talk to me about Rafael, Steve. Have you had any shares, or do you feel like this is a questionable pick? Any pushback?
I do not have any shares. I see why people draft him. Like, you're in the draft room, you're later on, you're filling a middle infield or an outfield slot that you need to fill, and you see a guy that put together, hey, there's two seasons in a row, 15 homers, 19 stolen bases, 16 homers, 20 stolen bases, and I really don't think there's any reason why he won't do at least that again. And that's not because of all the points that you made, which are valid. You know, there's nothing in the quality contact, there's nothing in the plate discipline. Like, it's a pretty poorly constructed hitting profile from the metric standpoint and the savant sliders and all that. That being said, you know, he has put together two seasons of 15 homers, 20 stolen bases. And the kicker is he is one of the best defenders in the league in center field and should be playing every day because of that. So he kind of volumes his way into decent counting stats despite the middling quality of contacts and plate discipline that he does have. And, you know, he is just age 25, and maybe there's a little room for growth there. So that's why I could see, you know, more of just painting, hey, there may be some upside to Rafael, mm-hmm. not to disagree with your point entirely, just sort of playing the other end of the coin. Just
for
because
sure.
He is such a good fielder, and we'll get into it in one of my fades coming up. Like, that, if you have that, like, you have a playing time floor, and therefore you can accumulate things that we care about in fantasy baseball.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. That's a like a Mason Wynn logic. The
but like, where did he finish? Where did he finish on the player radar last year? Like, if he just repeats, last year, which I think is fair, and you know, how many games did he played? 150. He played a full season last year. Like, they wanted him,
right,
you know, in the lineup because of his defense. Like, that was max playing time. Sidan Rafaela. Where was
one
he
thing
on the player already?
Do you have it in front of you? I don't.
No, I'll look right now. I'll pull
okay.
it up.
I was just going to say one other thing to note that is part of the reason why like Jerry's out in my mind is he seems like the guy that is constantly like on and off the waiver wire. So like looking at his game logs and splits.
In 12 team teams, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Not 15 like TGFBI or anything, but the his first half, second half splits last year. First half, 271, 797 OPS, 14 homers. Second half, two homers, 218 batting average, 587 OPS. Like, this like streaky profile to me is just like,
Dude, maybe
that's why I'm judging it, but
this
it's
is perfect.
Total drop off. Yeah,
he is going at ADP 119. He was 120th on the Fangraphs player.
Okay, so people are getting him literally at cost. Yeah. Okay, so I guess I'm saying I need Rafael to come down to his XBA of 242, and then maybe
Let me just pull it up. That was 12 teams. Okay, good. I was glad I was looking at 12 teams. So yeah. 120th.
He's my fade. I need that to come down to 142. But if he doesn't, good for you, Sadon Rafael. All right. So Steve, you are up for fade number two.
Fade number two. This is a yearly exercise for me. I am fading.
It's a tradition.
A speed only player, and that is Chandler Simpson. He is going at ADP 176. In March, he needs to finish 211 or worse. Eno Saris and Jeff Zimmerman always talk about how there's sort of a cutoff line for everyday players, and that's a 650 OPS. If you don't have a 650 OPS, like, your job is threatened and you're career as a major leaguer sort of is threatened, unless you have a skill like Zidane Rafael has, like elite defense to keep you in the lineup. Last year, despite all that Chandler Simpson did, the 44 steals and the 110 games, whatever it was, Chandler Simpson OPS 671. That was, despite having a 295 batting average, like, to have an average that high and still OPS that low just shows me that, like, this is not a great major league hitter. Yes, he has a hit tool. Yes, it's, much more of a hit tool than Esteri Ruiz is, the case that I like to reference from a few years ago where he had 67 steals and then was not in the majors the next year and really hasn't been back since. It's not that bad, but it's dangerously close. It's way too close for my liking. And then the kicker is that this is supposed to be the Rays' everyday center fielder, and he was horrific in center field last year. The Rays are a team that live in the margins. Yes, steals are a way that they could live in those margins, but I just cannot envision them playing, Chandler Simpson in center every day. And yes, they signed Cedric Mullins, but he's 35 and 31 and not as good as he was in center. They moved him to left, which does help that. I'm sure maybe he will grade a little bit better in left than he will in center. Mm-hmm. But that being said, if it's still that close, like, they're going to look to for either a guy that could provide, league average hitting, or at least league average fielding in the corner there and get something out of there, because Simpson's only going to steal when he's on base, and he doesn't walk either. So he's only going to be on base as much as often as he gets a single to be there. And if he doesn't run a 327 BABIP, that could easily be depleted too. I know the pushback is that, he's run these elite averages at every stop in the minors. He's always had super high BABIPs. Yes, that's the case. And he will still have an inflated BABIP, but it's not going to be because he hits the ball hard. It was a 17.2% hard hit rate. Like, guys that just don't hit the ball that hard, I just don't see them being up for long. Like, the leash is super, super short. It's way too short for me. I am out on Chandler Simpson this year.
Okay. First of all, I commend you for having your approach, because when I saw it, I chuckled that, like, there's been, like, Jake McCarthy, there's been Miles Straw, there's been, probably Billy Hamilton if we were doing the show.
Ruiz had to be one too, I think.
Ruiz, for sure. One thing I will point out, and maybe the industry is wisening up a little bit, is a lot of those other guys were at, like, ADP 105. So Chandler Simpson at 170. Yeah. Get a load of this, Steve. While you were talking, I went to the 2025 player rater. Yeah. Chandler Simpson, 170 on the player rater last year. So my counter argument in general. So I had the option to keep him in my home league, and everybody thought I would, because he was, like, my prospect last year. And they're like, oh, it's a lock. Van's getting Chandler Simpson. I threw him back in the water. So in a vacuum, I'm with you. And especially the counting stats are one thing that I'm really out on with Simpson. Like, when you look at the projections, you're like, oh man, like, he's, like, flirting with 110 on runs and RBIs. I don't really understand. First of all, I like the player as a player. Like, I think he's fun for the game.
Fun, it's
like,
yes.
For grade school baseball fans, they're probably like, they want a Chandler Simpson folder if kids are still using baseball folders. But he's, I know he's working on bunting, like, religiously in the offseason. So I think that's really fun and cool. Yeah. One thing that I don't get is why they have him listed as a platoon when last year his splits, he hit 299 against lefties, 293 against righties.
Yeah, it's not like he's going to hit the ball harder versus one of the others.
Exactly. Yeah. He's just hitting little, like, squibblers. So, yeah. And then the last note I would bring up is he did accomplish what he accomplished last year and that player rater at 109 games, which I know we just talked about how he's listed as a platoon. So if he got a little more volume, maybe that's a path. I think the OPS thing, the pushback I would give is like, what would the OPS look like if 30 of his 44 steals were doubles? You know what I mean? Like, yeah, in terms of value for the team. But it's a great point you bring up on the defense as well, because he does just kind of look awkward. And
like,
I'm surprised he's only 5'11". He seems like kind of a gangly guy when I watch him. Maybe it's just a batting stance. But
the reason why I think the Rays have him listed as a platoon, it's like the Rays have three clear platoon partners for their lefties. And, you know, or like on their bench, they have three righties to play with lefties. And they have Jake Fraley in right, Richie Palacios at second, Chandler Simpson in left versus righties. Those guys all bat from the left side. When they face a lefty, they have Ben Williamson, Johnny DeLuca, and Ryan Velarde.
Who just team philosophy.
Yeah, and like that's what the Rays sort of do. They also have Gavin Lux on the IL, Taylor Walls that, you know, should find ways to crack into this lineup, and the Rays are going to Ray and do that. So
if you can't tell, I wish I was in on Simpson, but I am with you that I am out this year. We'll see if it's 2-11 or worse, but hey, at least I'm pulling for you, but Steve might not be. All right. We're going to take our second ad break and then we'll keep the train rolling here with, our final target. We'll be right back after this. All right, so Steve, another name, just plant the flag in the WAF beach. Cody Ponce is a name that the whole industry has been talking about, but, you know, to give us a little credit, because I know there's just such a sour taste in the Twitter sphere right now about, oh, everybody recycle, like people that are griping. We've been talking about Cody Ponce since...
Dude, I think he was on one of our first off-season episodes. Yeah.
Yes, and we've been all about Ponce, and I did grab him in my home league. He is a target. I know we'll probably mention all of our shares in a later episode where it's not running so long, but got him in multiple spots, and at ADP 260, this would need to be 208 or better. I'm excited, man. You know, I always love extension fastball type of setups, and Cody Ponce is 6'6", 7'2" extension. We all know the talk track by now, but the KBO MVP, a 1.89 ERA in 180 innings. And as impressive as the 1.89 ERA is, I think I'm more excited about the 180 innings, because to get volume with a good offense and a good defense, that matter, for Toronto, to get a guy that presumably could go 175, I don't see why he couldn't throw 180 innings again, is really exciting at pick 260, especially when there's this much of a mystery box. Completely reinvented himself as a pitcher over there. The velo is up to 98. He added a kick change, which was really effective over there. He had a 36% strikeout rate, 6% walk rate. And he's looked good in spring. He hasn't looked like a world beater, but 13 innings, I think 12 strikeouts, just one earned run. And again, great defense behind him. So I got Cody Ponce here as my third target. Would need to finish 208 or better. And I think of the three, I could regret this later because pitching is volatile, but he's the one that I feel most confident in that we've talked about so far. I don't think I'll get much pushback from you on this one, Steve, but what are your thoughts on Ponce finishing 208 or better?
Dude, I think we've talked about Ponce on every single episode this offseason. I really
he's
do.
A waft so, like, guy, you, man.
You don't,
he's got the
you
stamp.
Don't need, you don't, we don't need to get too into it. Like, we like him. I have shares. I think he'll crush this ADP. all aboard.
Bingo bango. Okay, well then let's keep it moving back to you for your third target.
Yeah.
Oh, this, can I lead this one
yeah,
in though?
Yeah.
This is what ahead. I hinted go at ahead, the start ahead. Of the show where I go, this one seems a little sneaky on your part given the recent news.
I thought it was going to be, I thought it was going to be the Raleigh.
The Cal Raleigh. No, yeah, this was the yeah. one that I was like, oh, you sandbagger. This is a home run of a pick, but we got to talk about Kevin McGonigal. So hit me with it, Steve.
Yeah, I'll push back there. I mean, yeah, he was announced to make the team today, but I've been getting shares of Kevin McGonigal since November.
Me too. I mean, me too. We've been in, and you were yeah. you were first on the name. You definitely, and I was like, okay, I think you brought him up, you know, midway when he's prospect getting the hype last year.
Yeah, last year. Yeah, in season.
ADP,
yeah.
The 230 ADP. Like, I bet if you looked at ADP oh,
sure,
today,
sure.
is probably okay. like. So I might have to give you a penalty tax.
Yeah, yeah, that's fair. Yes, the ADP from the last, even from just like the weekend, like the fact that like each day that he wasn't sent down, his ADP was going up. So the ADP I technically have for all of March is 230. What right, do you want to do? You want to cut it to March 15th ADP for that?
Like, here's what I'm going to do. Since the news came out today, I've got March 24th. ADP swath in front of me. I'm not going to hit you with the min pick, which is 120, but I'm not going to give the max pick either. We're going to go right in the middle.
The
middle one is 183 today.
183.
So would you still do? Do you think he'll finish top 146?
146. I mean, it's my deeper. Chalkboard. Yeah, let's roll. You know. It's KPMG season. Like, it's tax season. It is, everything we love about him stuck in spring. He has a 6% swing strike rate, elite zone contact. Like, he's of the elite of elite players that, you know, this spring had a 12% barrel rate, a 16% K rate. Like, dude, I read, Alexander Chase was posting, like, you know, when the news came out that he made the team, like some of the scouting reports, and I just want to read this on air just because of how impressive
please.
It is. Like, it's I'll talk about how I feel reading it after I'm done. But for Baseball America, this was, you know, from this offseason. Coming out of the COVID canceled 2020 season, word began circulating in the Northeast that there was a special sophomore at Monsignor Bonner High outside of Philadelphia. McGonigal hit nearly 500 in high school and was even more impressive in summer showcases with Team USA. The Tigers drafted him with a supplemental first-round pick in 2023 after selecting Max Clark in the first round. 3 seasons later, it appeared that the draft chart to the path of the Tigers in the second half of the 2020s and beyond. McGonigal has hit over 300 in each of his first 3 pro seasons. After wowing with his bat hitting ability in 2024 and a season slowed by hamstring and a broken hamate, he showed improved power in 2025. He missed the first month of the season with an ankle injury, but he propelled High A West Michigan and then Double A Erie to playoff appearances. He finished this season by earning MVP honors in the Arizona Fall League, where he also started to learn how to play third base. Scouting report. Even though he will play much of the 2026 season as a 21-year-old, McGonigal is already a savvier hitter than many big leaguers. Velocity, he doesn't blink at top-tier fastballs, as he demonstrated a monstrous home run 100-mile-per-hour Jarlin Susana heater. Spin, he handled breaking balls with aplomb. Plate coverage, he has no clear holes in the swing. Expanding zone, he has the rare ability to be aggressive on pitches in the strike zone while rarely swinging the bat at bad pitches. Platoon issues, he had a higher OPS against lefties. McGonigal could sometimes be fooled by changeups, but even that is a blemish more than a glaring flaw. He is a perfect example of how having a short but powerful frame can be an advantage for a hitter. At 5'10", he has shorter levers than most, which leads to excellent back control. His timing and savvy stand out, and is quick with has a quick trigger with plus power when he gets to a pitch to pull. He had 52 extra base hits with just 46 strikeouts in 2025. Defensively, McGonigal is stretched at shortstop. He could play there, but he projects fringy at best because of the limited range and arm strength that he's stretched on his plays to his right. He's above average at second base and could even end up being a plus defender there. He can get playable at third, but his arm will be a limiting factor as well. He is more reliable than rangy wherever he plays. McGonagall has the ingredients to be a star and is a dynamic hitter with defensive value at second base. Second baseman Gleyber Torres returned to Detroit on a one-year qualifying offer, blocks the clearest path to McGonagall making the Tigers opening day roster, but his bat is too good to remain in the minors for too long. He should be the best homegrown Tigers hitter in decades. Like, if that that scouting report like makes me feel things. Like there's very few things that tickle me inside like a scouting report like that. And yes, I've fallen into the Jared Kelnick ones and those happen, but just looking at the numbers and at what McGonagall has done and how he's done it has me so excited. I'm so glad that I have as many shares that I have. And honestly, like it just seems like this guy is kind of like the next coming of like a Dustin Pedroia. Like that's what this feels like to me. I am beyond excited. Ready to get hurt again, but I do not think I will be.
Yeah, Steve, I know, you know, but I grabbed him in my keeper round 10 and put him in my prospect slot. And I was like, what if I got to wait 2 weeks, 6 weeks, whatever, I'm ready to do it. And then we get the news today. So riding high, love the prospect report. I saw a lot of things out on Twitter, I'm sure you did too, that were just like, Kevin McGonagall is the best hit tool prospect since blank. And like people were debating like when the last hitter like this came up. We're probably overhyping.
Keith Law said he was the best hit tool prospect in like the last 10 years that he's seen.
I mean, that's super encouraging. So I guess that leads me to my speculation just based on the projection systems that did not update. For one, it's notable that he's jumping AAA. So welcome to the bigs. It looks like they've got him slated for sixth, but if he is who we think he will be, there should be no issue with him climbing up in that order throughout the season. But so take like Zips, for instance, has him at 126 games, 18 homers, 8 steals. I guess I'm confused why the projection models have him at like a 255 hitter. If like, you know, at every stop, I mean, he did hit 254 at AA last year in 46 games. But yeah, they're like the hit tool, like the scouting report had him at an 80 hit tool. So it's a little weird that his prospect report on FanGraphs is like a 55 with a 65 future. I guess the question is just the big unknown, right? But with everybody heralding him as one of the best hitters in a long time, his path to being a fantasy star probably includes him surging past the 300 batting average, right? Because he's not like a super standout on power or speed.
You know what I think a decent comp is? Like a high-end result, the 80th, 90th percentile outcome for him this year? It's like, it's 2024 Jackson Merrill. He was 21 years old.
I was going to say prime's over.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah. I think that's good. Yeah,
maybe a little bit more walk, a little less strikeout, a little bit lighter on the 292 average if it's like a lower BABIP. But dude, this guy like just rakes line drives at like the perfect angles and hits the ball hard all the time. Like I don't see him hitting that poorly as like a 250 average. Like it could happen. It's hard for rookies to do that stuff, but it's.
But it happens with rookies all the time. Like a bunch of, you know, Jacob Marcy had a bad hit tool and he came up and hit, 270 or whatever it was last year. The points leagues double, triple target this guy because, I mean, it's this spring he has a 19% walk rate, 16% strikeout rate. Like these are video game play discipline numbers. So I think he's like the floor is an extremely dependable, like I got to be careful because I was going to say like, you know, the floor is Luis Arias, but you know, we have to see him be a 300 hitter before we can start talking like that. But the point is his plate discipline is insanely good as well. So that's McGonagall. Great take there. Okay. So now I think we're on final fades, if I'm correct. Yes. So my final fade, talking about some guys I rostered last year because Andy Páez was one that I rode the roller coaster last year, Steve, and the highs were high and the lows were very low and maddening and progressive throughout the season. His ADP at 130 is just a little too pricey. And maybe that's just, you know, but between him and Rafael, 10 picks apart, I guess I just don't love that little range of like OF2. But Páez is another one that, and he's having an okay spring as well, but I just don't get that excited from what we saw. Like, yeah, he went nuts for a couple months, right? Like last year, he had a two months of the season where he had a plus 900 OPS. But there was just so much mediocrity, a lot of solo shots when homers did come. I know it's cheap exposure to the Dodgers offense, but I feel like we fall in that trap sometimes with like Michael Conforto or like people that are at the bottom of that offense. And like Teoscar, when he's on base, is usually rounding all four bases. So like, I don't think him hitting eighth is that big of a bonus for his runs, RBIs. And then when you look at everything else about him, it's just kind of mid. And I think last year, the 27 homers is a fluke that I'm not buying into, to be totally honest. And I just don't think there's enough power for him to be even counted on as like a 25 homer guy. He does have a little bit better of like a pull air percentage than Rafael does if we're looking at those two next to each other. But Páez, maybe I'm just being a little harsh because he was so frustrating to roster last year when he was high and then he was just low and had a lot of like slow weeks and watched him a lot and just felt like he didn't do well in big moments. I know he had a rough postseason as well. So out on Páez, open to pushback, but zero shares. And I'm not getting swept up in the Dodgers vibes with this one.
Yeah, I don't have any shares either. Don't have much of a pushback. I mean, he does pull the ball in the air. He does have decent raw power and has gotten into it in streaks like you stated. The one thing, like, he is an elite center fielder. He was 97 percentile in range, and now it's above average last year. So that will keep him in the field. And like, you know, the Dodgers corner outfield is not great either with Teoscar. Who else is in the corner there for them?
Tucker.
Yeah, Tucker. And Tucker's fine. But you know, it's not like they need the defense is sort of what I'm saying. And that leads to being able to play through those slumps and work your way out of it. And he's going to be a streaky hitter, right? Like, he chases a lot. He doesn't swing and miss that much. He doesn't have the greatest quality of contact. There was a little bit better, at a 10.7% barrel rate and a 40% hard hit rate in 2024. He does square up the ball and hits the ball on the sweet spot as far as launch angles go. So there's not like too many ground balls or anything like that in his game, which, you know, I think is a good thing in the fact that, you know, he pulls the ball in the air and gets the ball in the air, and that could lead to, you know, more homers than you may think. He did chip in 14 steals there that last year. That definitely helped his value, right? And I don't know if you can sort of count on that again with Páez after he stole just one the year before. Does have a decent sprint speed. Maybe that's just part of his game.
He got caught seven times.
Stole
14. So he's not that successful. But yeah. It helped, though, for sure.
But I see it. I just think that, you know, he probably has more room for error because of that elite defense. And overall, like, it was a pretty good year, even if, to your point, it probably wasn't deserved. Like a 272 and 27 homers are probably the high watermark for him. I would agree with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, like, I'm with ATC's projection, and even that, I wouldn't be shocked if it was a little bit lower with, like, 22 homers, 10 steals, 256. Maybe that's enough to get him, or because he would have to be ADP 156 for this one to hit. But yeah, it's a no from me, dog. So I'm out on Paez.
He was 65th on the player rater last year. So
the regression's baked into the price. Okay, yeah. That's fair. But yeah, that it does look gaudy though. It's like, okay, 272, 27, 14. So I guess the industry is, maybe the argument is that the industry's already corrected enough.
Yeah.
And that it, with the defensive playing time, he still should find something. He has had a pretty good spring. So there's that as well. So could be wrong on this one. Like I said, like picking fades is a little bit harder for me. And I'm trying to do it off of guys that I've been kind of out on for one reason or another. So, yeah, Steve, let's hear your last fade here.
Yeah, my last one, I think it's going to get some pushback from you. I know it's someone that you've been a fan of, and I was a fan of last year and at several times in the past.
Yeah, it's a plot twist.
It's Trevor Rogers, ADP 154, so he needs to finish 185 at worst. To me, it's just like everything that we look at screams regression. A 226 BABIP was a career low. An 84% left on base percentage is just absurdly high, where, like, you know, 70, mid 70s are usually closer to average. There was a change in the pitch mix and it was increased fastball. The velo was up off of the really poor years, but it still wasn't elite like what it was back, or for a lefty at least, at 94, 95 back in 2021, 22 when he first came up. And then on top of that, Trevor Rogers has just been, you know, pretty injured throughout his career. His career high in innings, I think, is 150 as I pull it up. And he just came off the, you know, 100 major league innings he threw last year. You know, he didn't even start in the majors last year. He threw 142 innings between the majors and minors last year. So, you know, built up from that sense, but that was overall career high. The highest in the majors otherwise was 133 back in 2021. So I think just coupled with the fact that there's, you know, some easily regression to spot there, and the fact that he is a higher elevated injury risk than other pitchers, make this a relatively easy fade for me, despite how good he was. He essentially, from when he came up to the majors last year, was one of the best pitchers in baseball. And then also the fact that, like, he's a guy that, you know, has a 24-25% strikeout rate. I know there was that flash in 2021 when we all fell in love with him, when he had a 29% strikeout rate and looked really good, like a burgeoning ace there in Miami. But, you know, he hasn't really shown that since then. And like I hinted at before, he was sitting 95. Those years. He's at 93 this year.
Wow, Steve. Wow. You know, where do I start? Which WAF episode do I want to pull the show notes up open for? I think you are, you know, we are not pitching experts. So I respect the process where you're like, if everything I'm typically looking at is not popping and there's a history of health issues, then I'm kind of out. I am still in. I wish that I had him in more spots than I do. I don't know that I have any shares, but I was upset when I saw him get picked in my home league a couple nights ago. My case for Rogers is that the velo jump was at that crucial, you know, 92, 93 range, weird arm slot, thrown from the left side, has the changeup. And the fastball itself just has like ridiculous movement, horizontal movement, to where I feel like that and the sinker just throw people. Like, you know, he looked so good for so long last year. And I know it was still like, I mean, it was 109 starts, but a 181 ERA is, but then we've gotten burned in the past when we talk about stuff like that for, you know, like a Ranger Suarez comes to mind, where it's like, oh, look how amazing he was. But that was nine starts. This was double that. And in spring, he looks excellent as well, right? With,
Yeah.
16 Ks in 14 innings and like a one ERA or whatever it is. My question with him at 28 years old and him being on the bump for opening day for the Orioles is like, from a volume standpoint, what did he actually do for the entirety of last year? Okay.
Yeah, so like 109. It was like 140 between the majors and the minors.
Okay. So yeah, they've got him. Oh, what? It was between majors and minors.
Yeah. He had 109 okay. major league innings and then he had like 40, like okay. close to 40 innings. So close.
So
to
most of the projections have him at like 152, but I guess I'm kind of wondering like, if he's good,
yeah.
Why wouldn't for they like 160, keep him 170. Going?
You kind of have to project in, yeah, just because he's never done it before, right? That's true. All the projections are essentially projecting for a career high, at least at the major league level. But you know, your pushback, like he's looked great in spring. He's at a 14.8% swing strike rate. Like that's something that does port over a 27% strikeout rate in 14 innings, like, you know, the denominator for swing strike rate is pitches, it's at bats for K percentage. So that stuff's good to look at. And like in a pre Savant pitcherless world, like Trevor Rogers would probably be drafted higher just based on how good he looked. Right. Like,
yes.
the eye test for him was just ridiculous. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Right. In your defense, we were in on him early, and then early in the offseason, the ADP was even later. It was at like 165 or something, and now you're getting him where for the chalkboard?
154.
Yeah, so his price has gone up, I guess, just as like pitcher tax happens.
Yeah.
So you would need him to finish 185 or worse. I mean, yeah, like... I'm still in on Rogers. I think, you know, this could be one because you've talked about him for 4 years on this show that could come back and haunt you if he's just like dealing.
You're gonna be like, I've always been Trevor Rogers stan. How is he on a negative chalkboard for me? I should have thought about that first.
But no, I get it though in a vacuum. And I think you're nodding your head when I said like, it's kind of tricky picking fades because you can make a case for a lot of these guys and, you know, there's so much about who's going to take a step forward and there's not a ton of time spent on looking at like, and it's not fun, right? To just try to look at how guys could go backwards, but it's the name of the game. So, okay. So that wraps us up. We got, three each again. Steve's targets were Jackson Merrill, Zach Wheeler, Kevin McGonigal with the penalty text. My targets were Cody Ponce, Isak Paredes, and George Springer. And then for fade, Steve had Cal Raleigh, had Chandler Simpson and Trevor Rogers. And my fades were Bryce Terang, Sedan Rafaela, and Andy Páez. Steve, we're running super long. I think we might have to, save some of the home league breakdowns.
Yeah, that's fine.
It's great to be back. And we have baseball as we record this tomorrow. And as most people listen, baseball's already underway. Yeah. So, you know, on behalf of WAF, happy baseball, everybody. We have officially made it. We are so excited. I know we Steve and I were both under the weather last week, so sorry we've been a little spotty. But weekly shows throughout the season. We appreciate you guys being here, and your topics are always welcomed. You guys can hit us up on socials, but otherwise, hope you guys have a fantastic start to the year and cannot wait to just be riding the roller coaster with everybody, trying to win our respective leagues. But Steve, any kickoff words for the start of 2026?
Happy baseball, everybody. Enjoy the season. It's the best.
Love it. Thanks for talking baseball with us, guys. Talk to you next week.
Thanks. Later.